We come to lesson 3. I just will sort of quickly give a quick overview of the grammar. But to explain grammar just one point after another, I have to say it gets very dry and abstract. So I just go quickly through the grammar, then we look through the reading exercises, and then I explain the grammatical points in connection with the actual sentences in the readings. Okay, we're on page 33. No. This is what is called the interrogative pronoun. That's the pronoun that one uses in asking a question. Who or what? And this, the sort of stem form of the interrogative pronoun, the personal pronoun, is ka. And then this gets declined just as for the demonstrative pronoun or the relative pronoun. The basic form, the stem form of the relative pronoun is ya. So from this you get yo, young, ya, which is masculine, neuter, feminine. The demonstrative basic form, ta. For some reason we get so, but then most start with t, like tongue. Neuter, tongue, feminine, sa. Then the interrogative, ka, which gives ko, but the neuter, king, and feminine, ka. In fact, this sort of pattern, yata ka, works for other similar types of forms. Like, for example, for place, we have yata, meaning where, tata, there, kata. Yata means where in the sense of indicating a place. Tata, there. Kata is the question where. In regard to time, yada, when, there's when is indicating a time. Tada, then, and kada, asking a question, when, about time. Or in respect to causation, yato means from which. Tato, from that. Kuto, with the U, from what or why. Or also another series relating to causation, yasma. Yasma means from which, because of which. Tasma, therefore. Kasma, from which. You don't have to be worried about learning all of these forms right now. They'll be introduced gradually. The basic point I want you to see is that forms deriving from ya indicate what's called relative pronouns. Forms from ta are demonstrative, and forms with ka are interrogative or asking questions. So here we have the interrogative pronoun ka. And the forms are basically declined just like the ta forms. Except for neuter, we have king instead of tongue. And here you have singular, plural, singular and plural. Okay, then point two in the grammar is the verbs. To be. Okay, there are two verbs which mean to be. One is the most common form of this, the present tense, is ati. Ati means there exists, to be in the sense of there exists. Like here, ati sato, they give an example. There is a being. Then the other word meaning to be is hoti. And hoti is used not only to assert existence, but also to say that one thing has a particular quality. In the example I give, ida bhikkhu silava hoti. Here a monk is virtuous. I think maybe in Chinese the distinction between atti and hoti corresponds to that yo, is that used as a verb?
Yo.
Yo. It means to be, to exist?
Yo.
Like,
yo, yo, yo.
And then?
Yeah, existence.
Yeah. Oh, it's only used as a noun, is it?
Or
you have.
Use it as a verb also.
It's also used. And shi.
Shi.
Yeah.
I don't know what
you mean. Wo shi mei gou ren, right? So I am an American.
Yeah.
So that shirt would be like hoti. Yeah. We'd say, ahang hoti. Well, I have to say homi. Ahang America jatiko homi. I am an American. Then they have another, what they call another verb, bhavati, 2.3. But bhavati, you see, the word hoti is actually the Pali for bhavati. Bhavati is actually the Sanskrit form, which is also preserved to some extent in Pali. What happens? What happens in Pali is that there's a tendency for this combination of letters ava to turn into ho. And then, because Pali was derived from spoken languages, the BH somehow got turned to just simply into the H. So bhavati becomes hoti. So they're really, bhavati and hoti are really the same verb. And then to say that something doesn't exist, we have the form nati. There is no. That's in the example, nati sato yo evang sankamati. There is no being which thus transmigrates. Then the optative mood. Okay, the optative mood, this is a grammatical term. It means when you want to indicate in speech that something might be the case, should be the case, could be the case, that one might do something, should do something, then one uses the optative. In English, we indicate the optative by these words I just used, might, may, could, should. And the optative endings are given here. When you see so many endings, you might become frightened and want to run away. But really, they're basically very, very similar to the present verbal endings, except that to indicate, what indicates an optative is this E-Y-Y, A. So we would say, for example, I should gain, I should get, labeyami, or sometimes an alternative is used, labeyam. I should get, or I would get, in the sense I want to get. Labeyasi, labeya, instead of labeyati. Then the plural forms are virtually the same as the present, except with the a labeyama, labeyata, labeyung. And then the optative from hoti is formed from the bhava stem. Of course, actually, as I said, they're the same verb. Okay, then the notebook gives some examples of the use of the optative. But we'll come across them when we go through the reading exercises. Then comes the imperative. The imperative, this is the form of the verb when you're giving a command to somebody. You do this, you do that. This is on page 36. Here they just give for the second person. In the second person, when one gives imperative, one lengthens the A of the stem, like labahi, get something, janahi, know something, pajahahi, abandon. And then the plural imperative is actually the same as the indicative, the present indicative, labata, gachata, janata, pajahata. It's just from the context you understand whether it's imperative or indicative. And in the singular imperative, sometimes with the stems that end in A, the imperative can be simplified just to an A ending. They give an example, labha, you get. You could say pajaha, you abandon. Okay, point six is the present participle. The present participle is used to indicate an action which is presently going on and continuing, and it's the present participle is a form of speech which qualifies a subject or which qualifies a noun. It can be either a noun itself or it can function as an adjective qualifying another noun. I'll come to some examples of the use of present participle. Okay, now the present participle is formed by adding, this is the basic form, by adding NT to the present tense stem of the verb. So we have the present tense gacchati. The stem of this is gacha, and one forms the present participle. To form the present participle, you get the stem gacchant. Then you would add the endings to this, so you would have, for example, a singular nominative, gacchanto, singular accusative, gacchantang, plural, nominative plural, gacchanta, accusative plural, gacchante. But there's an alternative form of the nominative singular. Instead of having to say gacchanto, one could also say gacchang. So the example is given on the top of page 37. Gacchanto, gacchang, gacchanta, for plural, singular accusative, gacchantang, accusative plural, gacchante. This is the masculine only. For neuter and feminine, it would be somewhat different. But I think later on they will introduce neuter and feminine forms. Okay, so now for the uses of the participle, page 37. One use of the present participle is as an actor verbal noun denoting the doer of the action. In this use, it takes the masculine endings if the doer is masculine or if the gender is unspecified. Okay, so evang de sainto, one who is teaching thus, preaching thus. See, there's no separate subject, but the present participle form de sainto implies a subject. The subject is simply the general one. Or take the sentence, Anyang kayang san kamanto nati. Okay, nati means there is no. Here, san kamanto is the present participle, which means one transmigrating to anyang kayang, to another body. So there is no one transmigrate, no one who transmigrates to another body. In other words, there's no self or soul which transmigrates from one body to the next. Okay, so sometimes the present participle can imply the noun as the general one, but the present participle can also be used to qualify another noun in the sentence. It then becomes like an adjective. So, for example, we have the sentence, Buddhang gacchantang pasami. Here the verb pasami is I see, and here the I is implied. We could say ahang buddhang gacchantang pasami, including mentioning I see the Buddha. Buddha is the object, the accusative. And here gacchantang is a present participle being used to describe the Buddha, to indicate what the Buddha is doing in this case. And you can tell that gacchantang is qualifying the Buddha because they are both in the accusative case. So you see, they both are in the same case. In that way, you can tell that one is qualifying the other. The next example is given, Dhammang de sainto tathagato evameva vadati. Okay, here, de sainto is in what case? What case?
Nominative.
And it's nominative singular. And so there's only one other nominative singular in the sentence. That's tathagato. So de sainto qualifies tathagato. So the tathagata teaching the Dhamma speaks thus, speaks in this way. Okay, seven introduces a new class, two new classes of verb stems. One has the stem in E, like here, bhaveti. Bhaveti is, actually, we call a causative form from bhavati. To get a causative form of a verb, well, I think they'll introduce it later. I don't want to anticipate the book. But what one does is to strengthen the initial vowel and one changes the stem to make it an E form. So here we have bhavati means to exist, to be. So bhavati is literally to cause to be, to bring into being, which can be translated as to develop.
Let's think of another.
Okay, bhunjati means to eat. You don't have to write this down, I'm just giving examples to show how this takes place. This is a little irregular. But it forms a causative, bhojati, which means to cause to eat or to feed, in other words, to feed. This class is fairly common. The class of E verbs. And then the other class are the O verbs. These are not so common, but we come across a few of them. The most common, most important is karoti, which means to do. Yeah. Does it only happen with E stem verbs? E stem verbs are the causative stems. So when you see a verb with the E, you could get some idea that it is either causative or else it originally had a causative sense, and then it sort of takes on a sense of its own. Yeah. Well, a transitive verb is a verb which takes an object, a direct object. So that will have an accusative. Intransitive verbs, I would have to see the particular specific sentence. Well, when there's a transitive verb, then there will generally be an object in the accusative. Like bhaveti is an accusative. Okay, one. Let's take an example. Savako magang bhaveti. The disciple develops the path. So bhaveti, it seems, has to have an object. Karoti, to do, to make, will also have an object. Puri so kayena kamang karoti. A man does an action with the body. Okay, 8.8 on page 38. Accusative of manner. I don't really know quite what is meant here, but just when you see the expression tang king manyata, it means something like, what do you think? The Buddha very often uses this as a way of opening a statement or asking a question, a series of questions. Like he'll say to the monks, tang king manyata bhikkhave, then rupang nichang va anichang va. is form permanent or impermanent? Then they point out also that the word evang, which normally means thus, also has a special use as a polite form of saying yes. So over and over again you have evang bhante, yes, venerable sir, yes, venerable sir. Okay, then this word yadi, this point nine, means if, and it's used in composing a sentence in which you're saying, if such and such were the case, then such and such would follow. In other words, it's used to construct hypothetical sentences. Okay, then 10 is particles. Okay, the first are particles. Ah, this is an interesting point. If you add this little indefinite chi to an interrogative pronoun, then you form indefinite pronouns. So we take the word king, which means what, and you put chi to it, and then you get kinchi, which means anything or something. You have ko, which means who, and you add chi to it, and you get kochi. Of these words here, if you have the word katta, meaning where, asking a question, where is this? Katta chi will mean somewhere. Or the words for time, kada, which means asking when, you add the chi, kada chi, then it becomes at some time. Then the author has discussed these emphatics, he, ko, eva, and nu. These words I compare to spices used in cooking. It's difficult to explain to somebody exactly what the effect is of adding a little black pepper to a dish. It's just when you eat the dish made with black pepper, then you come to realize what is the effect of black pepper. If you add some oregano to a dish, difficult to explain what oregano does, but when you add a little oregano, then you taste it. If you add a little soy, how to explain to somebody what soy sauce does, but you put the soy sauce in, it gives another flavor. So the effect of these, he, ko, and eva, is something you can't sort of memorize. Think ko emphatic, he emphatic, eva emphatic. But as you read on, you get to be familiar with the way they're used. But the nu is used in connection with questions. It somewhat gives a little punch to a question. Like king nu, they give an example. King nu ko, so padipo san kamanto. Yeah, kin nu is something like, is it then the case? Or nun nu, that's a negative question. Is it not the case? Okay, then the word sakka means possible or one can. And it's generally used, maybe always, generally, I'm not sure, generally used with the infinitive form. So sakka gantu means it is possible to go, one can go. Okay, then yasma, this is the ablative of young. And it takes on a special meaning of being, a special sense of meaning, because, they say therefore, but I think tasma is therefore, but yasma is like since or because such and such is the case, therefore, this, we see this, yasma, such and such, tasma, such and such. Okay, then 13, etamattang vadami. This etamattang occurs only in this one special expression in which the little meaning is the meaning of that I say. The meaning of that I say. The meaning of that is this. We'll see how it's used in the reading passage. Then compounds. Compounds are very common in Pali. I hope the book will treat them more systematically later. But there are different types of compounds. Here they're just introducing a few. They're not yet explaining them in detail. But I will explain them as we encounter them in the readings. And later we'll go through and learn the different types of compounds. Okay, now there's the normal way of forming the ablative is with the ending in masculine asma. Okay, just an example of the use of the ablative. Piyasma dukang upajati. From what is dear or beloved, suffering arises. But there's another form of making the ablative to. T-O as an ending. So you could say piyato dukkha upajati. Same meaning. Or padipato, from the lamp. Okay, the future tense, here they just give one form, which we'll encounter. Bhavisati, will be. This is from that bhavati, the future of bhavati or hoti. Bhavisati, will become. Okay, sandhi. Sandhi is the change of a letter when two particular letters come together. And so here in this case, they're explaining when a word ends in a nasal, usually the ung form, and is followed closely by one beginning in a different consonant, the nasal is often changed, that is, it's assimilated, so as to belong to the same family as that consonant. What this means is illustrated by the examples. You have vinyanang plus t. Now the t is a dental form. T, 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 d, d, n. So instead of having vinyanang t, which is difficult to say, that final ung changes to an n. Vinyanang t. When we have the yang plus ch, ch belongs to the group called palatals. And so the final N, the final M, ung, when writing it changes to the palatal N, yan ch. Similarly, also with the labials, consonants produced from the lips, like we say, you would say dutiyang means second. But when the yang is followed by p, like when we say dudiyampi budang saranang gacchami, that ung of dudiyang changes to an m, dudiyampi. And sometimes, occasionally, when the ung is followed by a vowel, particularly a short a, for ease of pronunciation, that ung gets changed to an M. This happens very commonly in verse, but occasionally in prose. Okay, that takes us. I feel like I've crossed the desert getting through the grammar. Any questions on the grammar? But don't worry about it too much. If it's torturesome for you to listen to, it's also torturesome for me to explain. Okay. But I think it becomes clearer when we get into the actual reading exercises and then we see what these things look like when they're put into practice. Okay, so without further ado. Yeah, let me just get the page. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, actually, I'm sorry. You see, the de sainto, the present participle, can also take an object, just like a finite verb, like. It takes because it's here it's functioning as the participle from a transitive verb, so it will take a direct object, which is in the accusative. I think no.
look at the sentence that comes after the examples. Note that the participle may take the objects, adverbs, etc., with which it can occur in a full sentence, and that the modifying expression with the participle may precede or follow the noun modified. I think it's best to come to the reading passages and then see how the constructions are, how the sentences are actually constructed. Okay, any further questions? Okay, then let us go to the reading passage on page 29. The first passage, a short passage, this is from the Milinda Panha, the questions of King Milinda. And this, in this particular work, which actually comes several centuries after the time of the Buddha, the work consists of a dialogue between a Buddhist monk named Nagasena and the king of Gandhara at that period, King Milinda, who is a king of Greek descent, ruling over the state of Gandhara. And this king had somehow learned about Buddhism, and he was interested. He was a very keen thinker and philosopher, and so he had many doubts and questions about Buddhism. And so he called his famous Buddhist monk, Nagasena, to his court to question him about the Dharma. And so King Milinda begins, he asks, Bhante Nagasena Atti Kochi Sato Yo imamha kaya anyang kayang sankamati. Okay. Bhante is simply venerable. Nagasena. Atti means is, but it's in the form of a question. Is there? Kochi, here, kochi means any. And kochi is in what case? Nominative. And it is agreeing, kochi is agreeing with what? With satto. Satto means being. It's the same as the Sanskrit word sattva. Like you have bodhisattva means enlightenment being, or ordinary sattva is a sentient being. But in Pali, where you have these combinations of different consonants, tva, it gets simplified into ta. So, kochi satto. And then after this comes a relative phrase used to describe the type of being that the speaker has in mind. Here we have the word yo. Yo is what case? Yo. And, excuse me? Nominative, right. And yo goes together with satto. In other words, the phrase starting with yo is elaborating upon the word satto. Imamha is what? Yeah. And it goes with kaya, which means body. And what case is imamha, kaya? Ablative, and anyang means other, kayang means body again, and what case is this?
Accusative.
And then we have this special verb, it's a verb, sankamati. Now, I think I mentioned earlier that many verbs as well as nouns are formed from a simple root plus a prefix. The root here is come. Come means something like to walk or to go. And some just really strengthens the meaning. So maybe it suggests walking on, continuing on. But the verb sankamati takes on a special meaning in Indian philosophical literature. The meaning is to transmigrate. And so in Buddhist literature, sankamana means the transmigration of a soul or self from one body to another, from one life to another. And in Buddhism, of course, transmigration is of a self or soul is denied. And so the king is asking, first I'll translate word for word, Venerable Nagasena, is there any being who, from this body to another body, transmigrates? Or in normal English, Venerable Nagasena, is there any being who transmigrates from this body to another body? And here, when they speak about a being transmigrating, this implies a soul or a self. And so Nagasena replies, Nahi Maharaja. Maharaja means great king, and na means no, and then the he gives a little punch to that no. Something like, surely not, great king. Then the king says, Yadi Bhante Nagasena Imamha Kaya Anyang Kayang San Kamanto Nati Nunu Muto Bhavisati Papakehi Kamehi Ti. Okay, the Yadi we've just come across means if. And to get the sense of the sentence, jump from Yadi to Nati. If there was no, then we come, taking the sentence a little bit out of order. Okay, let's go in order. Yadi, if Venerable Nagasena, Imamha Kaya Anyang Kayang, from this body to another body, Sankamanto. Here, Sankamanto is what form? What form? Excuse me? Not the case, but what form of speech is it? Present participle. And here you see, there's no separate subject mentioned. So we can understand that the present participle is functioning as the subject. So we would render the sense in English as one transmigrating. So if there is no one transmigrating from this body to another body, okay, that's setting up the hypothesis, then the consequence from that follows from that hypothesis, nunu muto bhavisati papakehi kamehi. The nunu is asking the question, poses the question. Na is negative and the nu gives the question flavor to it. Like, wouldn't it be the case? Wouldn't it follow? Muto means that one would be free. Bhavisati is future of bhavati or hoti, will be. And papakehi kamehi is what case? What case? Instrumental or ablative? I think ablative is more appropriate. The instrumental and ablative plural, instrumental, ablative, plural are identical in form and their meanings often converge. But here ablative is better. So wouldn't it follow that one would be free from evil karmas, from evil actions? And notice generally in Pali syntax, the verb comes at the end, but here the verb comes a little before the end in order to gives a special emphasis to this sentence, like he's showing that there's dangerous consequences would follow. So the sense of the sentence, if it were the case, Venerable Nagasena, that there is no one, no self or soul, transmigrating from this body to another body, then wouldn't one be freed from evil karmas? One could do evil actions, one could do whatever one wants, break all the precepts, and one wouldn't have to worry about getting a bad rebirth or suffering in future lives. Then Nagasena replies, Ama Maharaja, Yadina Pati Sandaheya, Muto Bhavisati, Papakehi Kamehi. So Ama means yes. Yes, great king. If, now here another word is introduced, Pati Sandaheya. Pati Sandaheya is, what type of noun is this? It's not a noun, I'm sorry. I'm not deliberately misleading you. What type of verb is this? What mood is it? Not the causative, no.
Optative.
And it, okay, the indicative, it's third person singular. This indicative form is pati sandahati. It comes from the root da, which means to put, to place. Then you get the simple verb dahati. Then it has the two prefixes, pati and sam. But when the ung meets da, then through the law of sandhi, gets changed to the dental un, so it becomes pati sandahati. And it's hard to get, by looking at the root and the prefixes, it's hard to know exactly what the verb means. We just have to see how it's used in context. And in the context, what this indicates is, you could say that rebirth through a relinking of the consciousness from one body to the next, rather than, and the Buddhists use this idea in contrast with the idea of transmigration, which was the Hindu idea, the mainstream Brahminic idea. This idea is that there is a self or soul that transmigrates, it remains the same, and it goes on from one life to the next. For the Buddhists, there's no self or soul that transmigrates, but the stream of consciousness continues flowing on from moment to moment, and the consciousness which passes away in one life relinks with a new body and then continues flowing on in the next life. So it's like a stream which is always changing, a stream of water always changing, always becoming. It doesn't remain the same. But that consciousness doesn't come to an end at death, but it relinks with a new physical body and then flows on, again still changing in the new life. And so this idea of relinking or reconnecting, this is the Buddhist idea of rebirth, which contrasts with the Hindu or Brahminic idea of rebirth as the transmigrating or reincarnation of a soul. And so Nagasena says, yes, great king, Ama Maharaja, if one did not relink, if one did not reconnect, if one did not undergo rebirth, one would be freed from evil karmas, evil action. Yasma chako maharaja pati sandahati tasma na parimutto papakehi kamehi. Here, chako takes on the meaning of but. Usually ch means and, but here it establishes a contrast. And the yasma means because, since. And yasma refers to tasma, which comes later on. But because, great king, pati sandahati, because one is reborn, because one reconnects, tasma na parimuto papakehi kamehi, therefore one is not freed from evil actions.
Pari means completely free, right?
Yeah, actually that's, yeah.
One is not completely free from evil actions.
Yeah. Though, I don't know if there's any significance, not much significance in the change of word. It's not implying that, perhaps the sense is that one is not freed at all from evil actions. Therefore, one is not at all free from evil actions. Okay, then the king next expresses his puzzlement. He says, Bhante Nagasena, Nucha Kamati, I'm sorry, Nucha San Kamati, Pati Sandahiti. I'm sorry. Bhante Nagasena, Nucha San Kamati, Pati Sandahati Cha. And notice, no subject of the verbs is specified, but in Pali, when you have just a verb without any specified subject, the implicit subject is just the general one. So he says, Venerable Nagasena, he's puzzled now, perplexed, the king. He says, one does not transmigrate, and yet one reconnects, one is reborn. In other words, how could it be the case? Is it the case that one could be reborn without any transmigration of a self or soul? Then Bhante Nagasena says, Amar Maharaja, Nucha Sankamati, Pati Sandahati Cha. He just repeats the same thing as a statement rather than a question. Yes, great king, one does not transmigrate, and yet one is reborn, one reconnects. Then the king asks, Kattang Bhante Nagasena, Nucha Sankamati, Pati Sandahati Cha. How is it, Venerable Nagasena, that one does not transmigrate, and yet one reconnects, one is reborn? Opamang karohi. And here, karohi is what part of speech, or what form of the verb? What is that? It's a command, but we call it a grammatical term, imperative. And it's imperative singular. So it's, an opamang means simile. So make a simile. Make up a simile. This is, when you read Buddhist literature, you see many, many similes, especially in the older texts. Okay, so then Bhante Nagasena gives the famous simile of the lamp. Yata Maharaja kochid eva puriso padipato padipang padipeya. Kinnu ko so Maharaja padipo padipamha sankamanto. Okay. Yata means as if, or as great king, kochid eva puriso, some person, some man, here padipato is what case? Ablative. And padipang is what case? Accusative. And padipeya is a verb, optative verb, optative, singular, first person, right. Okay, so it is as if some man were to light one lamp from another lamp, or as if a man from one lamp were to light another lamp. Kinnu ko so Maharaja padipo padip. Padipamha sankamanto. Kin indicates that it's posing a question. Kin no. Like, is it the case then the ko is just a little emphatic. Is it the case, great king, that that lamp, Sankhamanto, is passing over, or has been passed over, or let's use the present participle form, that that lamp has been passing over Patipamha is what? What case?
Ablative.
So the Padipo refers to the new lamp, the newly lit lamp. Patipamha, the ablative, is referring to the old lamp. Is it the case that the new lamp has been passed over from the old lamp? Or is it the case, in other words, that the flame of the lamp is transmigrated from the old lamp to the new lamp? And the king says, Nahi, Bhante, surely not, venerable sir. Then Nagasena concludes, Evameva. Evameva means in the same way. Evameva ko, in the same way, great king. Nucha san kamati, patti san dahati cha. In the same way, great king, one does not transmigrate, and yet one reconnects. Here, the stream of consciousness is like the flame. The body is like the body of the physical body is like the base of the lamp. And as the flame of one lamp is used to light the flame of the next lamp, but we don't say that the flame of the old lamp transmigrates to the body of the new lamp. So the consciousness passes over from this body into a new body, but it doesn't transmigrate as one entity, but rather just the flow, a stream of consciousness, reconnects and starts in the new life. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to go any further today, so.
when we have the soul,
yeah.
You said the soul was that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't soul
be a
No, not necessarily, because that's a good question, because so goes with padipo. So is the, it's the demonstrative pronoun which goes with padipo. Padipo is a lamb. A lamp is not a living being, so it's really a lamp is not masculine or feminine. I hope I'm not telling you something startling new. So a lamp is just a neutral object. But for some reason, in Pali, probably in various European languages, masculine and feminine forms are ascribed to inanimate objects. So a lamp in Pali, it's a masculine noun, padipo. And so it has a masculine demonstrative pronoun, so padipo. Okay, any further questions? Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. Wait. Here, in the first, there are two clauses in the sentence. In the first clause, which starts yata up to padipeya, the subject is puriso, which is nominative. Padipeya is a transitive verb. So the person, the man, lights padipang, lights a lamp. That is the accusative, the object. And by the way, this is another causative verb, padipeya. Peti. It's actually created from the noun dipa. Dipa means lamp or light. So dipeti means to cause light, to light up. Okay, so padipeti takes, since it's transitive, it takes an object, padipang. But in the next clause, so padipo padipamha, let's put it with the verb sankhamati. That lamp transmigrates from the other lamp. Transmigrates doesn't take, it's not a transitive noun. It's not a transitive verb, it's intransitive. one transmigrates, you could just say, so sato sankamati, that being transmigrates. It doesn't need an object. So sato imasma lokasma sankamati, that being transmigrates from this world. So it doesn't need a direct object. Though I see in some places it can have. Here in the third sentence of this selection, yadi imamhakaya anyankayan sankamato, transmigrating from this body to another body. There is a direct object, or an accusative. And then in the last sentence of the selection, the forms are intransitive, they don't need an object. Nucha sankamati pati sandahati. One does not transmigrate, and yet one is reborn. They don't need objects. Any others? Any questions? Bhavisati, yeah. Yeah. It's a few. The subject is muto.
Right, the subject.
Yeah.
There will be one, or one who is free will come to.
No. It's not that one who is free will come to be, but there's an implied subject, one. So, okay. If there is no one transmigrating from this body to another body, isn't it the case that one will be free from evil deeds? Muto is originally a past participle, and now it signifies one who is free. Even in English, we could put it in a past participle form. Isn't it the case that one will be freed from one's evil deeds?
And therefore, the two
adjectives
were actually free.
Yeah, muto refers to ahead to papakehi kamehi. One is free from evil deeds. No. Instrumental would not be correct. It's ablative. Any additional questions? Yeah, at the end of the sentence. Yeah. In writing, it comes. When reading, I'm not reading it, because it's really just like in English we have the closing quotation marks. That's basically the way it functions. So when somebody makes a statement, like when the king is asking the question, he doesn't say ti. He just says, Bhante Nagasena ti kochi sato yo imamha kaya anyang kayang sankamati. Then that final ti is put in because the early Indian scriptures, they weren't written down, so there's no way to show by writing a quotation mark. That's when referring to some. It's a way, I have to find an example, but it's a way of indicating either that something is referring back to another quotation, or it has a way of sort of separating out a phrase within the sentence. Let me see if I don't, there's not an example in this passage. In the second selection? Avijati, I see. Avijati ko ahang etamatang vadami. Or I see the third line. Okay. Abijati ko ahang salha etamatang vadami. Here you see the sense, the verb is vadami, I say. Etamatang is the meaning of this. Etang this, and atang meaning. So I say that the meaning of this. This refers to loba, which means greed. That the meaning of this is abhijja. Abhijja is covetousness, desire, excessive desire. So abhijjati, it gives a special kind of emphasis to it. Almost like we were to put it in single quotation marks. Yeah. I think my way of treating it is simpler. The sense is the same, but it's a simpler way of explaining. It's etang. You say, I say this meaning is... It's a peculiar idiom. We don't quite have something that could we could render it word for word exactly into English, so we have to take a little liberties. But the reason why the abhijati, the T comes there, it's like saying in English... Let me think. I can never think of examples. Let's say, okay, I call this computer an electronic brain. So I write this. So I put it in quotation marks. It's a way of sort of singling out that phrase and giving particular emphasis to it. Or let's say, I call him a first-class Pali student. Then I put that expression, first-class Pali student, in quotation marks.
Did you go, did you make any modification to the meaning, the rendering of meanings for the
yeah. For the further reading, let's see. I didn't give last week meanings.
No.
Okay, okay. Not for the further readings. Okay, I have some written. For akamaniya, when it refers, actually it generally refers not to a person, so lazy, slothful, not so good. I use unwieldy. I think that's good. Excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry. We're on page 43. The glossary. The first one, unwieldy. Yeah. Unwieldy. Maybe I should write this word. It comes from the word kamma, karma. Karma means not only deed or action, but work. So, kamaniya, the positive form, means easy to work with or wieldy. The negative, akamaniya, means not easy to work with, unwieldy, difficult to manipulate. Okay, then going down to adukta. Okay, they give free from malice or ill will, not wicked. But... this is based on the word dosa. It's a past participle related to the word dosa. Dosa means hatred. We have lobha, dosa, moha, greed, hatred, delusion. And so the past participle form, the positive form is dukta, which means one who has dosa, one who has hatred, hating. Then udutta, the negative, is one without hate. Okay, then going down, aludo, aludo. They give as a meaning a non-covetous person. I mean, that's not incorrect, but aludo, this is the adjective formed on the basis of lobha, which means usually lobha is rendered greed. And so ludo, the positive form, means greedy, and uludo means non-greedy. Then going down further, kamaniya, they give ready, active, functional, but I think wieldy is, conveys the sense, the better sense. Then panchubadara kanda, better simply, the five aggregates subject to clinging. Or I say they have they say the factors of the fivefold clinging to existence. But it should be, the sense is rather the five factors of clinging to existence. Then, bahulikatta. They give practice frequently, exercised, expanded. I use cultivated. Yeah, 44. I'm sorry. Go down a little above the middle. Bahulikatta. You see, Piyo Puratima Pusati Bahulikatta. I use cultivated. It comes from Bahu, which means much, and Katta means made or done. Bahulikatta means, so literally it's done much, made much of, or cultivated. Then Vijanati, you know, they get things mixed up. They have for Vijananang, act of cognizing. But then for Vijanati, which is the verb related to Vijananang, they give perceives. But it would be better to keep them consistent to give, take out perceives and replace it with cognizes. Cognize. Cognize. And both are connected with vijnana, a few words down, which means consciousness. Then viharati, they give lives, resides, abides, leads a life. Also we could add dwells. It's not that the others are wrong, but in some cases dwells works best. Then the word samatha, you have satchang samatha. They give completed, grasped, accomplished, but I think they've misunderstood. The sense is taken up. Then for singhatako, they give cross or crossroads. Many translators use that, but actually I think singhatako, crossroads, would be chatupatta, where four roads meet. Sangatiko seems to be rather a square in the center of a town or city, I think. Okay, I think we have to stop now. Okay, so next time let's just... I will try to finish the readings at the beginning of the chapter and then go into the other, the further readings at the back. But when we go into the further readings, again, I get lazy, and then you have to come to my help. Lesson three, the further readings at the back of that lesson, from page 40, 41 on.